Thanks, Mark. Good morning. Lovely to see these shining faces. My name is Catherine Hedge, and I'd like to welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. Welcome to a community that celebrates freedom of expression and the quest for knowledge and humanity's truth. Whether you communicate by Morse code, or email, or handwritten letters, or blogs, or texting, you all have something valuable to say, and you all have the power to listen. For all of us who plan to change the world with our dreams, our words, our actions, here is a place to begin. And the beginning is now. So please take a moment to communicate to those near you a welcome. Thank you. That makes this room feel very warm in a good way. We are a fellowship of Unitarian Universalists who meet to express our individual beliefs and religious convictions. We belong to the national organization, the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. We have no creed, prophet, or sacred book, but we agree on 7 principles that are listed on the back of your bulletin. And visitors, you are invited to join us after our services for refreshments. And today, our treats are provided by Sybil Perkins, Dave Lambert, Jim, and Barbara Bascom. We thank you very much for that. If you are new to the fellowship or you have a guest you would like to introduce, you're welcome to do so, but please wait for the microphone. So do we have any guests that we want to have introduced?
Hi, is it on? I'm not really new, but my name is Maggie Dale, and my parents were members here for years. And I grew up in this church, but not this building. And so anyway, I got to say hi to lots of you, but not all of you yet. So it's really nice to be here today visiting.
Okay. Well, welcome. Please note in the bulletin we have our announcements, so they're listed here. I don't have any additional announcements. All right, today we celebrate the transformation of communication. In all its myriad struggles and blessings, communication is the most essential human trait. We also celebrate those who helped us form our very first words, our fathers, or those who took the place of our fathers. With this lighting of the chalice, we wish you a very happy Father's Day. Oh, and for those who will someday be fathers. Oh, yes, and our spirit fathers. Thanks. Please join us as we sing our first hymn. Marilyn is going to play it through for us first, this one and the last one, so we can hear it, and then we'll all sing together, No Longer Forward Nor Behind, hymn number 9 in our gray book. Thank you. Now is the time for our joys and concerns. Please wait for the microphone.
Good morning. My name is Sandy Nelson, and last night the RE program had a fabulous camp out, and we were going to go canoeing this morning, except that was the joy, sort of. And the concern is Larry Weaver fell. He was supposed to take us on the canoe trip this morning. He fell off his roof yesterday. He's okay. He's in the hospital. They wanted to keep him overnight for observation, but I hear that his spirits are fine and he's okay, and he was a little upset that he had to stay at the hospital, but he did. So that was the joy and the concern, but he's okay, so that's the joy too. And there's not a, because of all of that, sort of, there's not a babysitter today, so if that affects anybody, I don't see. Burke, you going to spend the time in the nursery today? No. So we're doing something else, Nari, but that's it.
All right. Well, thank you. And good luck, Larry. For those thoughts that are left unspoken, we wish you peace. And now we would like to join you. We'd like you to join us for a brief journey through time and welcome you to the information age.
Oh, I missed reading, did I? Nope, not yet. Thank you. Oh, no, I'm good here. Thank you. Lovely. Oh, I know I saw some of you before when you saw what the book was today that was probably a favorite when you were little. Okay. But I have a question for you, and that is, when you were small, when you were this age, over here, okay, what did you do when people didn't understand what you were trying to tell them? Oh, right on cue, yes. Do you remember those times when you really were trying to get a message? What'd you do?
Well, I kind of had a temper tantrum. When I had this big idea, I just didn't know the words to say it. I just had this temper tantrum. I did the same thing.
You did the same thing.
I did the same thing as my brother.
That was? Well, that is when you're really struggling to get that communication out. Like you said, throw a tantrum. And I think even sometimes inside our heads we still do when people just aren't getting what we're trying to say. And so what I have for you today is a classic story. Oh, this is one thing I wanted to say. Is they say that children can understand what they want to say. They can understand their thoughts a long time before they're actually able to say it. And that's why some people are teaching babies sign language for milk and thirsty and hungry and angry and things like that. So, but I have a classic story for you about a very patient father and a very impatient little girl who are having a big misunderstanding. And it's called Nuffle Bunny. Yay! I love this story. This is by Mo Willems, and he did the Pigeon on the Bus stories, and it's in a book, but I think this was one of his earliest, and I think it's really good. Okay. All right. Would you hold the microphone for me? Would you just hold this? Oh, I need to be careful with the book because her brother might want to eat it. Yes, I will be. Not so long ago, before she could even speak words, Trixie went on an errand with her daddy. Trixie and her daddy went down the block, through the park, past the school, and into the laundromat. Trixie helped her daddy put the laundry in the machine. Is she helping very much? No. But she thinks she is. Okay. She even got to put money into the machine. And then they left. But a block or so later, Trixie realized something. Trixie turned to her daddy and said, "Can you read this with me? Aggle, flaggle, clabble." "That's right," replied her daddy. "We're going home." One more time. "Aggle, flaggle, flabble," said Trixie again. "Blabble, blabble, wumpy, flappy. Snurf." And the next page, you know what it's going to be. "Now, please don't get fussy," said her daddy. Well, she had no choice. Trixie bawled. "Wah!" She went boneless. She did everything she could to show how unhappy she was. By the time they got home, her daddy was unhappy too. As soon as Trixie's mommy opened the door, she asked, "Where's Nuffle Bunny?"
And now she's just like, "I'm trying to tell you that."
The whole family ran down the block, and they ran through the park, and they zoomed past the school and into the laundromat. Trixie's daddy looked for Nuffle Bunny and looked and looked and looked, but Nuffle Bunny was nowhere to be found. So Trixie's daddy decided to look harder, rolling up his sleeve here. "Nuffle Bunny!" And those were the very first words Trixie ever said. Thank you very much. And shall we sing for our beautiful children?
Go now in peace. Go now in peace.
I love how they follow the script that wasn't even written. That's wonderful. Okay, now it's a time for our offertory music. I only can imagine how Orpheus must have felt when he was going to Hades to try to bring back his wife. So this is the music from Black Orpheus. Okay. A reading is from Isaac Asimov from his lecture at Newark College of Engineering in 1974. I discovered to my amazement that all through history there has been resistance and bitter, exaggerated, last-ditch resistance to every significant technological change that has taken place on Earth. Usually the resistance came from those groups who stood to lose influence, status, money as a result of the change. Although they never advanced this as their reason for resisting it, it was always the good of humanity that rested upon their hearts. For instance, when the stagecoaches came into England, the canal owners objected. Not that they would lose money, although they would, but they feared for humanity. Because as the stagecoaches tore along at 15 miles an hour, the air whipping past the nostrils of the people on board would, by Bernoulli's principle, suck all the air out of their lungs. And now from cave bears to blogs, the dizzying change of communication. When I was little, my father played Morse code with us. He'd say, di-di-dit, da-da-da, di-di-dit, and we'd try to figure out what it meant. He was a radio man on the Navy during World War II. In fact, he suffered a permanent hearing loss as a result. Then he spent his time listening for messages that meant life or death. It was inconceivable to us, his kids, that he couldn't just pick up a telephone and call for help. Di-di-dit, da-da-da. Did it is SOS. Because, you know, and I'm only 60, but in my lifetime, the transformation of communication has been both frightening and thrilling. Of course, I figured that by now we'd be talking to people on Mars. Well, we can't do that, but we can communicate with robots that are crawling across our surface. And I read Dick Tracy only because he had the cool little wristwatches that he could look and see the faces of the people and as he was talking to them. And we don't have that, but I can sit on my computer and I can talk face-to-face to one of my friends in Canada and have our three-hour writers group. And sometimes our friend from Colorado joins us. And it's free. I mean, that is really incredible. Or I can also be annoyed because the person at the next table is going over their entire stock portfolio out loud, you know, which is rather annoying. Now, my grandson, Thurston, wants to make a telephone with two cans and a wire. So we've saved the cans. We just haven't put it together yet. But I find that really interesting because he almost never uses a telephone with a wire. He likes to use my red telephone in my front room because it's the only one he knows that has a wire to it. And the phone that he usually uses is this little box with only an on button that we can also use to find a great breakfast diner in Omaha or take pictures when we're sitting at the table. And that's really quite amazing. So recently I have stepped into the world of hypercommunication. Well, maybe I wasn't stepped, but I was really dragged into it. You know, there's troughs in my carpet from being pulled through, and I've begun to blog. And this is why. I am a writer. Oh, I've got to take my shirt off. This day we write. And yet most of my work has been published in very small venues or very specialized or shared with a face-to-face group. In fact, I've read more to this fellowship right here than I have to anybody else. And so at times I felt like my writing was destined to sit at the bottom of a cedar chest. And my old coach, Leonard Bishop, told us that that's worse than death itself, to have your books just sitting there. And so now the whole world of electronic publishing is absolutely exploding. And just 8 years ago, it seemed like a vanity stunt to make your writing into an ebook. But now it's becoming a viable path for both established writers and novices. And a lot of mid-list writers are getting their books republished by putting them out as a Kindle book. The only problem is that your work can still sit at the bottom of a virtual cedar chest if you don't mark it. And where do experts say you should begin? With a blog. But for years, websites and blogs terrified me. But it was but this is why it was. I was absolutely amazed how this process was so easy, so much easier than the old system. This is why for the site that I publish on WordPress, there are 454,294 bloggers. There's 608, and each day there's over half a million posts. I'm sorry, 1.5 million comments, and 144 million words put up just in one day. So that's pretty impressive. Dr. Wesch, who is at Kansas State, says it best in his YouTube video, Web 2.0, that 8 years ago, you couldn't put up your own words without having a lot of intermediaries, a lot of experts along the way. They had the programs. It was expensive to get your website developed. The format was rigid. Buying or hosting sites and domain names was really daunting. But I was able to get this blog site up in less than 30 minutes. I was able to get my domain name purchased, a template picked, and a picture that I like to put in the middle. And so my writing colleagues and I have been collaborating on posts on our individual pieces, and we add categories and tags that let random searches happen and help people find our work. So that's the way that we plan to market our books as well. And all we have to do is just click a few virtual buttons, and all of our Facebook friends would have access to everything. But from there it grows. You know, I've read about the spread of typhus and how they made maps to discover the origin. But I never imagined the stats page on WordPress. In fact, it's hard not to get compulsive about checking it every day, because it tells you how many people have read your articles, which ones they've read, and in which countries they've read. And since January, we've had people in over 35 countries read our blog. Now, it may be one person in Pakistan, but it's one person in Pakistan. You know, I'm not going to have them in here with me. So I think that's really incredible. And it's so, and again, we've done this for 6 months, and yet those are small numbers. We've had close to 2,000 hits. That means 2,000 times somebody has opened it up. And that's, you know, that's a little number. But still, individuals in these countries, I never would have reached them otherwise. So I think, they, you know, maybe they're coming for laughs. Maybe they're coming for some information or just a glimpse of Midwestern life. I don't know. But if I'm willing to spend more, I could upload videos of live poetry readings, and I could chat in real time for my fans that I hope to have, or I could set up a subscription service and put my books out on as installments. You know, Charles Dickens lives again. And though sometimes I want to creep down to my office and write in seclusion, I feel like I've opened up a Pandora's box and I've flung my soul out into the wilderness. But the best part, though, is that there's one creature still left in the cedar chest, and that one's coming along with me, and that is hope. So, thank you. And now we have colleagues that are coming, going to share their exciting things that they have here. And I believe, let's see, that Chris Renner, your turn.
When Kathy asked me to talk about my foray into the cyber world, I tried to think, when did I get my first email account? And if I remember correctly, it was probably in about 1989 or 1990. And I remember we had a black screen with a little blinker indicator, and we had to keep track. I think it was 18 spaces to a line, and then we'd have to hit return, and we could do 18 more spaces and hit return. And then all of a sudden, in about 91, I think it was, this thing came on the screen that was Eudora Mail by the University of Indiana, if I remember correctly. And then suddenly there was Netscape, and you could actually have these dynamic interactions of web pages rather than these sort of gaudy screens with little green lights blinking at you. So fast forward a while. I adapted email quite quickly because I was living in Italy, and it was a whole lot cheaper to send an email than to make a phone call. And so I got pretty well versed in that. I did not get into designing web pages, however, until I came here in the United States. And that wasn't until probably around 2004 is the first time I went into dealing with a web page. But in 2007, I began this web page, which is communitybridge.blogspot.com. And Blogspot is a hosting service like WordPress, Kathy just had mentioned. These are services that are out there that for free you can put up a web page in 30 minutes or less. And so I began this as part of the program I was doing in journalism and mass comm at K-State. At the time, this was the companion site for my radio show, because in media, a lot of what they were talking about was this need for synergy, where you have, yes, you have your old-fashioned broadcast radio show where you're sitting there in front of a microphone and it goes out over the airwaves. But you also have to have something on the web, and you have to have something on Facebook, and you have to have something on Twitter and all these other media forms, because today, to get information, why we don't have the Dick Tracy wristwatch, if you pull out your smartphone, you can surf the web. And so you have to have a variety of means by which people can access the information you make available. So I began this primarily because I began podcasting the radio shows. And I began it, if you scroll down a little bit, Kathy, for me, down a ways here, further down, there'll be the archive a little bit further. Furthermore, I think. Yeah, there it was. Okay, here, no, further down. Yeah, and anyway, in the archive is still there, and it goes back from 2007 until I stopped the show last summer. Yeah, there. And so if you click, like, on 2007, the little, just click on the little arrow, Kathy. Yeah, one of the technological problems with Blogspot is it's not real user-friendly. So now you have to scroll back down. Hold on. Okay, so there. You see, and so each number there indicates how many entries have been put in. And so originally I was just putting in the comments I made personally and things like that. But if you scroll up a bit there, Kathy, if you could please, to, 2007, okay, so you see the kind of things that are there. And can you click on the little arrow by 2008? The arrow, yeah. See? And so as you see, I progressively started having more and more information. And if you click on December 2008, or the arrow always, Kathy. Sorry. Now you have to scroll back down. So this is part of the problems with some of this technology. Yeah, but this here has individual pages. Each one. So you have to scroll back down. There, whoop. Okay, so, and now click on clippings for December 28th. What I got into doing was part of the reason for having the radio show, and scroll back down, Kathy, sorry. But this here, yeah, and this is one of the things that people now talk about. People don't like to do scrolling. And so a lot of the more modern updates, like I could have updated this site, but since it's no longer active, I didn't. Part of the reason why is people don't like to scroll. And so they want the information to come right up at their face, because if you're on a smartphone, scrolling becomes time-consuming and you're spending money on minutes. But anyway, so I began doing these things called clippings, and Kathy wanted me to talk a little bit about those. So if you can scroll down, Kathy, to where it starts. All right, that should be it. What I started to do was I started reading a lot of news aggregation sites. There's a lot of them out there. Talking Points Memo, for example, or Think Progress, Huffington Post, which is a totally online newspaper now that's been sold. It started off being and making a lot of money in the process of being sold. And so what I started to do is I started to read a lot of these, and I would choose various topics that were pertinent to what was going on locally and at the state level and nationally. And I tried to provide an alternative to what I saw on in the press in the Mercury and what was coming over the airwaves of Cayman Radio, which any of us have listened to Cayman, we know is not very interesting stuff. And so at one point in time, this was probably consuming between 20 to 30 hours a week doing this kind of reading and determining which articles to post and put out there. I think that it was, some of you will remember Allie Staunton, who was a member of this congregation, who's also into IT. And Allie and I talked at various times. And one of the interesting things about all this is getting to that magic number of people who go to your website or to your blog and read the information and then encourage others to read your information. And Allie spent a lot of time working on a website for the Manhattan Alliance for Peace and Justice, and we never reached that critical mass. If you scroll up a little bit now, Kathy, up there I have a counter, now down a little bit, sorry. And you'll see that a little bit further, right there, there's been 31,962 individual unique views of this web page since I put it up, since I started counting on January 1 of 2009. And if you talk with people, depending upon the size of your community, and community in itself is sort of interesting, because when I go in and look at the statistics on who reads this, first of all, the United States is first, but I have probably around 300 people who on a regular basis read this page from England for some reason. There's a large group of people from Bangladesh, 120 to be exact, who read this page from Bangladesh, or did when it was very active. And so I'm not quite sure why the Bangladeshis find this website interesting, since I'm usually talking about Kansas information on the program. But it's one of those things that show how people connect and what becomes community, because we have sort of a concrete idea of community. Those of us that are gathered here create community. But community can also be, as web pages and blogs show you, can also be a much broader collection of people. And so it's sort of interesting to see how those things come. Later on in 2010, I started to change the format somewhat. Instead of aggregating news, because I thought, well, you know what, folks, I've been on the air long enough. You know that these sites are out here. You can go to them yourself. And I started to do more things that connected with the specific topics of the radio shows. And so that changed the format somewhat. One of the reasons was I just didn't have time to spend 20 hours a week reading information and deciding what I wanted to repost. And so that's in 2011. If you go to a 2011, scroll down, stop, click on the arrow. Okay. All right, now you have to scroll down again, sorry. It's not a dynamic page. Doesn't want to scroll down, sorry. Well, actually, just keep scrolling down a little bit further. Keep scrolling down. Oh, it's being slow to respond. Another one of the joys of technology. It never does. It's never as fast as you want it to be. Because all those little links have to reload, unfortunately.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, you know, you try to remind people that humanity is more than a machine, but sometimes I wonder. Yeah, keep scrolling. Okay, here, stop there. And so what I started to do was I would just put the additional links with the podcast of the radio show. And so all those links are active. So if you click on Sam Brownback downplays his involvement in Creepy Prayer Rally, it'll take you directly to those are called embedded links, and it'll take you directly to the source of the information, and you can read that information as it relates to that particular podcast. And so that's, because that's what I've noticed is starting to happen more often than giving long, being a place where you just repost stuff that's already posted. You embed it into specific ideas that you're trying to share. So I don't know if I'll ever go back to doing something quite this intense again in my life. Who knows? I notice that there's a lot of stuff going on. There, you can find all sorts of communities out there, anywhere from cooking Italian food to political stuff to whatever. And so you can connect with people. Some of the social media that's come up in the last 5 to 10 years in particular, like Facebook, LinkedIn, MySpace, those have all been alternatives to what were the original concepts of the web. And the original concepts of the web was that you would become part of it and you would be very active in it. And what we now have is a more superficial. People get their information from Facebook versus going to the original sources. And so that's one of the things I've noticed that's been changing. But those are some of my reflections.
So I don't have anything to show on the screen, so we can wait for the lights. Okay, there we go. So today I'm going to be talking a little bit about some of my experiences using these kind of modern communication technologies. Can you not hear it? How about now? Better? So I'm going to be talking today about some of my experiences using these modern communication technologies in my teaching. And when I was asked to do that, my reflections kind of highlighted a contradiction in my own personality and also some of my motivations for teaching in general. And I think that's really what I want to talk about. I'll talk a little bit about the technology and how that's a tool for accomplishing the teaching goal. But the technology is definitely a tool. So the basic thing that I've discovered about myself is I'm really a Luddite. Completely, and I enjoy being a Luddite. I like fountain pens. I like writing with those fountain pens on heavyweight paper. I like vinyl records. I like vacuum tube amplifiers. I do like computers, but I like computers more along the green and black command line than Windows, whatever. And so that's me, and that's I like it that way. So you might feel like that's a little bit contradictory to someone studying physics. We think about physics as pushing boundaries of knowledge about the physical world, and technology kind of comes directly from that. But I would argue that there are a shocking number of Luddites in physics, and a lot of that technology is kind of fueled by 1970s oscilloscopes and other Luddite technology. So there's that component of me, but the point I'm trying to make is that I'm not really that interested in blogging. I'm not interested in websites. I'm not interested in that technology in and of itself. I've grudgingly accepted that I need to have a Facebook account to keep in touch with friends who are scattered around the world, but only grudgingly. And the experience that I'm going to describe here comes about basically because I saw something in the technology that I could get that I didn't have before. And so let me tell you a little bit about what I did. I had my students make what I called a screencast assignment. Are you guys familiar with the idea of a screencast? Okay, so there's this software called Jing. If you're interested in it, go to google.com and type in Jing and you'll get it instantly. What Jing lets you do is record a video of what's going on your computer screen
and at the same time record audio through the microphone connected to the computer. And so you can make a very quick, easy, narrated video clip of whatever you want, whatever you can put on the screen. It can be animated if you can put an animation on the screen. It can have pictures, and you're pointing at different components of the pictures and talking about what's going on while you do that. And so every week, I had my students put together a Jing video of a solution to a physics problem. And the point was that they should narrate that video and describe whatever was going on in the problem. The reason that I did that kind of stems out of what I had mentioned, my thoughts on education. And my thoughts on education basically come down to a real sense of freedom that I felt when I first started going to college. I had not felt very free in high school. I felt kind of oppressed. And when I got to college, I felt like I could study whatever I wanted, and I could study it however I wanted, and there was no one telling me what to do. And if I just did what I wanted, how I wanted, it seemed like things were going well. I got very good feedback from that work. And so I hadn't thought much about that experience later, but as I moved along through the rest of college and grad school. But I read a book at one point, and if you've not read this and you teach, I would encourage you to read it. It's called Teaching to Transgress by Bell Hooks. Has anyone read this? It's awesome. I can't recommend it enough. And this author really captured sort of that feeling that I had, along with some other positive and negative feelings about academia. And I'd like to read just a couple of brief paragraphs here. Despite intensely negative experiences, I graduated from school still believing that education was enabling, that it enhanced our capacity to be free. When I began undergraduate work at Stanford University, I was enthralled with the process of becoming an insurgent black intellectual. It surprised me and shocked me to sit in classes where professors were not excited about teaching, where they did not seem to have a clue that education was about the practice of freedom. During college, the primary lesson was reinforced. We were to learn obedience to authority. And she goes on to discuss how she fights that and maintains the idea that education is about the practice of freedom and it should be enabling. And that's really how I felt when I first got into college. It was enabling me to do more and more, and that freedom to do more and more was leading to a freedom to choose how I spent my time, which is the ultimate freedom, right? I mean, we only have so much time. We need to choose how to spend it. So I wanted to bring that component of freedom to create and to do to my students, and I felt like this technology had the ability to do it. One thing I knew for sure is I wanted the students to communicate their ideas in their own words. Say ideas, hear those ideas coming from them, challenge those ideas, see what's working, what's not, and Jing allowed me to do that. I set the problems for them, here's a problem, you solve it. But they had the freedom to go about it however they wanted and then see how that turned out, and we would talk about it. So that's what I did, that was my motivation. And the good part is it seemed like the product was pretty good. Some of the animations were quite crude, and I didn't care about that. I didn't want it to be a polished, nice product. I wanted it to be something that came from them, whatever their abilities at the time were, and I didn't want it to take a lot of time. So that's the good side. It seemed to produce something interesting there. The negative side that I became aware of as we went along was that I was forcing them to do this. So in a real sense, I wasn't necessarily freeing them, but enslaving them. More than half of them kind of complained fairly bitterly about doing this. So I don't actually know if this is a good thing to do, but I'll say at the end, two of the students who complained the most bitterly grudgingly said, you know, I think I did learn something from doing those videos. So I don't have a this is great or this is terrible finish to the experience. I'm going to try it again. We'll see how it works. That's my experience, and that's what I wanted to share.
Hi, I'm Charlie Kempthorne, and I wanted to, I hate to read things, but I wanted to stay on target and keep it under 3 minutes. So I wrote this out. God, and I use that word advisedly, bless email. When we were young, we learned how to write so very well. Great spelling, great grammar, paragraphs with unity, coherence, and development, and never just one sentence long. We learned to write that way so very thoroughly and so very well that later in life we were afraid to do it. Yes, afraid. We didn't want to take the chance of making a mistake and being thought uneducated. So we just didn't write at all if we could avoid it, and we could. Hence, we were, for all practical purposes, unable to write. We were illiterates. Well, we couldn't read. We could read, of course, Harper's Magazine and all that, but we really wouldn't and therefore couldn't write a line. Then came email, a system of communication through words that was invented by often the least attentive students in English Comp 1, the engineers and the mathematicians. They wanted to communicate with one another, and they invented an informal and simple means of doing it off the cuff and quickly. Among other things, it was instantaneous and it was cheap. Can't get any cheaper than free. So people used it. The less they worried about their composition skills and the more they dashed things off, the less self-conscious they became, and the less self-conscious they became, the better they wrote. Although lately things have devolved into texting, surely the means of communication used in the lowest circles of hell, email and the online communications via chat and such have done more to revive literacy than anything any English teacher or teachers ever did. I say this myself as a recovering English teacher. We did too much too soon, and so we taught people how to write well and hate it so much that they never did it. The more educated they were, the more they were functionally unable to write. Then for the work I do, teaching people how to tell the stories of their lives and to do it naturally and easily, just as if they were telling the stories to family and friends, the web and all that therein is wonderful. If I can get a student to write at all and to write quickly and easily, I can get her or him to write well. So, as the old newspaper man, as an old newspaper man once advised me when I was pondering le mot juste in something I was crafting, Charlie, just sit down and shit it out and leave a little work for the editor. And that's just what I've been doing ever since.
Okay, Mark Moser here. As some of you know, many of you know, I've been working on a solar tracker and have gone through some of the marketing processes to kind of get this thing started and out into the internet. And over the years, I've tried to do some of the I've various web pages and stuff over time. You know, I got my first email in 92, and of course, it takes a lot of work. So I had some professionals do this. And it just has some pretty amazing things that make anybody anywhere on the planet can see what I've got going, which is really pretty cool. And I've had hits on this site all over the planet. So if you hit so what does this thing do? Well, you hit the little video button there and watch the movie. And it just shows up and goes. I hope. It's supposed to be pretty quick.
Yeah, it's the connection's just, I think, we're having a little trouble.
Oh, there we go. See, it just kind of moves by itself. And from a perspective of trying to explain what this thing does, it'd be very difficult. It's very difficult to do. It just follows the sun. But there's a lot more to it. This is actually done at Tom Manny's house. and just a little taster of what this thing does. And so I have a variety of links describing the different parts of it, home, about, what you can do with it. And the other really interesting thing I'd like to show about this, and you know, you can all go see it yourself, I hope you do, and scroll down to the bottom. You can, there. I've got it just recently put in a feature that we can select a language. So you go down, you select a language, pick something Chinese. And it goes through and page by page translates it into the language you've chosen. And anywhere on the planet, they can see it. And so I think it's great. I think it's just pretty amazing. Kind of reminds me of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, the fish. Remember the translator? There was a translator fish that you could get on a specific planet. You stick it in your ear, and translation was no longer a problem. So we've got it. Thank you.
How many more do we have? How many more websites?
Two
more? Are we? All right. Well, when Kathy was soliciting suggestions for people doing stuff on the web, I really didn't think I had anything to offer. I have a couple of business websites, but they're I don't have any videos on them. So I decided to submit this one. This is my brother, a website where he has combined work that basically combines causes and organizations that he supports, and he uses this in conjunction with a presence on Facebook, which I joined a few years ago to monitor what my kids were doing, and I discovered all kinds of family members were on Facebook and friends, and that he has used Facebook to espouse certain causes. We tend to be fairly kindred spirits politically and socially, and so I asked him if I could show this. This is not part of Facebook. This is his own personal blog. He's got 9 categories of organizations, and I think a total of 46 websites. And one of them right there is Sojourners. It's an organization. Sojourners is a religious community in Washington, D.C. The founder, Jim Wallis, is now, I believe, listed as a spiritual advisor to President Obama. I was a longtime supporter. I took Sojourners magazine, and for my own reasons, I don't follow it any longer. Actually, if you just go back up at the top, something that users of Facebook are aware of, if you put your birthday on Facebook, it will show up on other people's news feeds, and it's fairly common to offer birthday greetings. He did something here called a Facebook birthday gift experiment. I don't understand the experiment part, but if you have a birthday on Facebook, and if you're a family member, you get a personal gift given in the name of one of these organizations. So my birthday was a couple of weeks ago, and he gave a gift in honor of Oxfam, which is down just a little bit. And it's a way of promoting those organizations while honoring somebody's birthday. And I thought that was really an interesting perspective. Now, if you're just a friend, he lumps you in with everybody else that week and will give a gift. And the organizations there, you know, even though there are a lot of political differences among people, even in our own family, I have never seen anybody object to having a gift given in the name of one of these organizations. They're just, it would be really difficult, I think, to find anything to object to there. I should say my brother is, I had to look up this morning, he has 920 Facebook friends, many hundreds more than than I have. He's a neonatologist at Arkansas Children's Hospital, 7 years my senior, and he has also taken on, I think one more that I would just highlight is some environmental causes. There is an organization, 350.org, right there, that we featured in a presentation we made here at the fellowship a year ago. 350.org is the organization established by Bill McKibben, whose book Earth we presented on last year. And these are annotated links. So in the little white box at the top, my brother explains why he supported that particular organization. I'm going to end there. I guess one thing that I do in terms of online media, I am the producer of the archive services, Sunday archive services for the fellowship, and anybody who has given you a link, I would be happy to, and if they agree, I would be happy to include those with today's archive. So.
I'm Kim Bellinger. I was supposed to be canoeing today, so I wasn't really prepared to talk, but I had a few thoughts as I was sitting here. As a lot of you know, I'm a photographer, and I have a small business. So a few years ago, when I started to kind of charge for my work, I realized I needed to somehow get a website to show that. So I started a blog. I don't really use it. I use it more as my website. I don't get on there. As you can see, my last posting was in February. I'm not very good about keeping up with it. But I do use it as a way to show links and kind of as a portfolio and with pricing information and things. So at the top in those blue words, if you link on those, they show, like if you click on babies and kids maybe, then it shows, you know, examples of my work in that area and a way to contact me. I like writing, but I prefer to write on paper, like Chris said, and I prefer to write about more personal things. And I have a conflict in that I don't really want to share personal things on in my business world. And not that it's anything to hide, I just don't think it's anybody's business. So I think I'm not very compelled to write about a lot on my blog, and that's why I don't keep up with it. But you know, in today's world, I don't advertise, and this is how I get my business, is either this or word of mouth, and this kind of is word of mouth now. So this and Facebook. So I do have a Facebook page also, and I'm also not very good about keeping up with that. But I've seen how it can be successful for people, and for me, I did experience that a few years ago. About 3 years ago, I used to do these, before I had a studio, I used to do these little sessions in a local baby boutique store that is no longer in business that was by Target. It's called Hey Baby. And I met with the owner, and I put some work on display there. And I said, well, what do you think about me coming in maybe once a month and doing these little sessions where I set up a little studio and I photograph kids? And she said, great, that would be great. I'll put it on my Facebook page, and we'll advertise it that way. And the only advertising we did was on her Facebook page and mine, but I didn't have that many followers. And she had daily followers, hundreds of followers that would check and see what her sales were and things. And I would sell out those sessions in a couple days. And not a lot, but maybe 14 people. And just because of the presence on Facebook. And it was all her presence. And so I did experience the success from her. And on those, when those would happen and I would have a really particularly popular session, I would go on my, she would have a link to my blog And I can go on there and I could see how many people were looking. And at the height of those, I would get about 1,000 hits a day. And it was only when it was, you know, when it was directly related to when she would put that on Facebook. And so that was when it was really successful for me. But now that I'm not really keeping up with it and I don't have the relationship with her, and I'm a little bit reluctant to kind of, you know, I don't want to have to do it all the time. I don't have that kind of presence anymore. But I still do use it as a way to show my work, and I'm not sure what the future holds for this. a real website, I hope. So that's all I have for that. Thanks.
I'm Sylvia Beeman, and about a couple years ago, I was asked by 6 other women to show my artwork with them, and so now we are called Circle of Seven. And one of the women is, by profession, a website designer, so she made this fantastic website for us. And being all females, we got together and brainstormed everything, like our cute little symbol there, which has combines symbol of female symbol, a almost like a breast form, and the seven. And it has several images for each author. And I'm a person who has trouble keeping up with my email. Everyone's always mad at me because I don't check my email multiple times a day. I also have a work email from my day job, and that one I have to check frequently for vendors that I deal with, and also from my coworkers and my boss. And so a really good friend of mine set up a personal web page for me a while ago, but I didn't even look at it for almost 2 years, I think. And then when I finally did, it said, Saliva Beeman Artist, which we quickly fixed. But so, I mean, if you have yourself out there, you need to keep up with it. So we fixed that, and it has a bunch of my artwork on it. I also have my artwork displayed through Strucker Nelson Gallery, who is my vendor. But they represent a few dozen artists. So this website has been really helpful. Because if we apply for a show, or I personally apply for the show, instead of having to laboriously send in my slides to whoever I want to show my artwork with, I could just refer them to this link. And I think it's a really glitzy, I mean, it's just really nicely done, and I'm really so pleased to be part of it. And just in this past year, I have 5 shows between, from June till fall, and all of them I got through showing my work like this, and only 3 of them are showing with my group Circle of Seven, so it benefits me individually. And I'd have to say that all my 6 other compatriots have their own really glitzy websites too, so a lot of people are a lot more together than I am, but so anyway, it's been really helpful to me. Thanks.
Well, as we're closing in, I wanted to just flash mine up there. So we did put our links in the program if you're interested in looking at some of our sites. So because I think we have wonderful things offered here. I do know, however, for being a long-term Unitarian, that you are always extremely unhappy if you leave with things seem like they're working really well, and it's all okay. So I found this terrific clip from Ted Koppel that I think it's an old clip, but I couldn't find the broadcast date and looked for many hours. But it's a really cool clip about this whole new world of communication.
We're overwhelmed by the records, and I see no sign that anybody's going to stop keeping them. But the number, amount of records, especially with television, who can keep up with it?
This is ABC News Nightline. Reporting from Washington, Ted Koppel.
As he so often does, the senior...
We record everything. Everything. The impact of that becomes totally numbing. I mean, future generations are going to be looking at literally billions of pictures and reams of videotape and film, and I'm not sure that they'll be able to make any sense out of it, because we don't discriminate between what is important and what is mundane. We're facing a tremendous paradox. On the one hand, we want to be very careful that what is important from our time is somehow preserved. If we don't preserve it, then in effect we are doing the greatest disservice that we can to generations yet to come, because they're not going to be able to learn from our mistakes, or for that matter learn from the great breakthroughs that have been made in our time. But on the other hand, we are creating so much information on videotape, on film, on discs, cassettes, paper, that it becomes a matter of being able to perceive what is important and what is not. In this age of technological revolution and explosion, we are inundated by so much information that perhaps the greatest need we have is for a body of people who will sort of sift from that information, will sort of winnow it down, so that we have something in a form of order that we can pass on to generations yet to come. When you're dealing with a great library, that, in fact, is precisely what a library does. The largest library in the world can no longer accommodate all the information that is available. Someone has to select. The editing process is more important today than it has ever been in the history of the world. I fear that we in the mass media are creating such a market for mediocrity that we've diminished the incentive for excellence. I think we're losing our ability to manage ideas, to contemplate, to think. We're becoming a nation of electronic voyeurs whose capacity for informed dialogue is a fading memory. If you have never had even a passing acquaintance with Aristotle and Socrates and Plato, then you can't really understand the foundations of man's evolving struggle with philosophy and ethics. You begin to lose track of what has always been kind of an undercurrent in man's development, and that is a sort of moral evolution. We have evolved in this century in technical ways that truly numb the mind, but that is not true of the evolution of man as a thinking animal.
So there. Would you please join us for one round of our final song, which is hymn number 301, Touch the Earth, Reach the Sky. Number 301, please stand as you are able. Now you can all let that breath out now. Okay. And our closing words are from Scientific American, Jose Delgado in 2005. Can you avoid knowledge? You cannot. Can you avoid technology? You cannot. Things are going to go ahead in spite of ethics, in spite of personal beliefs, in spite of everything. So go ahead and have a lovely day. Thank you. Thank you, presenters.